A new president has been recently set, with Chad's ex-dictator Hissène Habré facing charges in an African court. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court faces a political stalemate with the African Union. Its attempt to indict Kenya's democratically elected president and his deputy has unified the African Union in its stance against the ICC. The AU is threatening to withdraw cooperation with the ICC, despite many of its members being signatories to the setting up of the body. So, what's next? This week, Africa Today asks, African Union versus ICC, who is on trial?
The International Criminal Court has received a lot of attention since its establishment back in 2002 for primarily targeting people from Africa. Cases brought against African leaders like Laurent Gbagbo of the Ivory Coast and the Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga have put the credibility of the court into question. At the recent African Union summit to celebrate 50 years of continental independence, members took a hard-line stance against the ICC. None more so than Ethiopian Prime Minister Desalegn, who said the process had degenerated into some kind of race hunting. However, it is also the case that many African countries call for the setting up of the court in the first place. So with Omar Bashir of Sudan and Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya having also been indicted, Africa Today asks if the time is right for the AU to make their call for an African criminal court a reality.
It's interesting to note that the respective leaders of the ICC and the African Union are African women. Can the ladies bring order to the squabbling men? I'm Vuyiswang Mwongwana, welcoming you to Africa Today. Aside from the political grandstanding, there are some serious questions about how to address restorative justice for victims of mass violence. Is the recent indictment of Chad's ex-dictator and the setting up of a special African tribunal to try him a way forward? And could it be the seeds for the setting up of an African criminal court? Here with me to discuss what feels like perennial questions are Toby Cadman, who is a barrister and international criminal law specialist, Julius Mbaluto, a journalist and political commentator, and on the line from The Hague, Evelyn Ankuma, who is the executive director of Africa Legal Aid. Welcome to you all. Thank you so much. If I could start with you, Evelyn. Sorry, or is it Evelyn?
Evelyn,
can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thank you so much, Evelyn. Evelyn, sorry, I get your name confused. I really have to ask you.
Evelyn, it doesn't matter.
That's okay. I really have to ask you from your perspective, especially as you look at the conundrum that the two respective female leaders of the ICC and the African Union are facing. How do you see this conundrum? What is the real issue here? I mean, are we talking about self-determination with regard to Africans being able to work out how to deal with their own criminals, or are we talking about something much deeper?
Well, the real issue is promotion of accountability and ending of impunity. The ICC is a court of last resort. And so if African states can hold their offenders to account, if they can bring to justice persons suspected of ICC crimes, international crimes, that is genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, then there would be no role for the ICC to play.
Right. But the criticism of the ICC, if I could bring you in, Toby, is that there seems to be an exclusive focus on African leaders, which brings the criticism that this body is a tool for some bigger political agenda, namely a Western agenda. Is there some truth to that, in your opinion?
Well, I think that's certainly the appearance when you look at the cases that have been dealt with to date. Whether that is a conspiracy by the ICC, I think that's probably unlikely. But there is an over-concentration on African countries in the matters that have been brought before the ICC.
Is that because it's easier to get them?
Well, if you look at the example of Kenya, mm-hmm. I mean, Kenya really is going to be the litmus test for the ICC.
Yes.
Its integrity is now being put on trial in the Kenyan case. Now, the Kenya case is a particular point and example because that was a self-referral. So it's not necessarily a matter that the ICC has particularly targeted.
Okay.
But had there been will and ability at the national level, as Evelyn has said, to put these matters on trial, then the ICC wouldn't have needed to be to involve itself.
Right.
So there is also a question of whether African states are dealing with this themselves before the ICC is required to get involved, and that is a big question. And the point that you make about whether this is a matter that the African Union, whether there should be an African criminal court, it's a really important question, and arguably there is already an institution there that could be used as a halfway point between national justice and international justice.
Which institution is that?
You have the African Court of Human People's Rights, and there has been much discussion about extending its jurisdiction to criminal jurisdiction. Now, that hasn't taken shape yet, but as an individual, as a lawyer who's focused on war crimes in a number of different jurisdictions, the one thing that you realize is that justice is better served closer to home. So mm-hmm. if you can put these cases on trial where the crimes have been committed,
yes.
then victims will have a greater sense of closure. But that institution, that process has to be legitimate.
And if I could bring you in, Julius, I mean, it does seem, it's almost like a crisis of self-confidence among the African nations themselves to be able to deal with these issues, because there are so many contradictions of trust. The key issue being trust, essentially, as to whether the judicial process will actually, you know, have any kind of integrity. Are you hopeful about that potential?
I cannot be very hopeful, given what has gone on lately. We've got the AU coming on board, taking a very negative stance against the ICC. But when you look at why was ICC formed 10 years ago, it's about ending impunity.
Right.
And to end impunity also is about justice to the people. And therefore, when you look at what's going on, it doesn't send very good signals.
And 34 African countries actually signed up to that statute.
Half of the African countries are signatories to the Rome Statute.
Yes.
And therefore, you ask yourself, they weren't coerced. They did it willingly.
Yes.
Now that they feel that they are being targeted, why are they feeling that way? Because at the end of the day, crimes have been committed, they've been identified, judicial process has to happen through the ICC, because Africa doesn't have that mechanism as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you say that international justice or no justice, if you go back home, local tribunal, Kenya's case, they were given that opportunity to introduce, come up with a local tribunal.
Mm.
But some of the people who are in the ICC today, in parliament, they were on leading other people say, let's go to The Hague.
Right.
And became
right.
a reality for them. Now it's a question of let's go back home. You can't have it both ways.
Well, but also it does bring the question, Evelyn, about the integrity of the ICC itself, because all the cases, or the majority of them, have been African. How would you answer someone who said, why aren't people like Tony Blair and the president of the USA before the ICC? Because an international crime is a matter of perspective, is it not?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to clarify the comment that Kenya was a self-referral. It was not a self-referral. Kenya was a case that was taken up at the initiative of the ICC prosecutor. So I wanted to make that clear. If Kenya was a self-referral, then it wouldn't make sense that the Kenyans are saying that they can handle the case at home. It was not a self-referral.
Okay, well, if I could just let Toby Cadman just clarify briefly before you move on.
Yeah, my apologies. The situation with Kenya is you're dealing with it's a state party, and it's the ICC prosecutor who had looked at the matter of a state party. So, not referring itself as has been, which is possible, obviously, but it's not a self-referral in the sense that the Kenyan government referred the situation to Kenya, but it's a state party, it's signatory to the Rome Statute, and the ICC prosecutor obviously exercises jurisdiction under the Rome Statute. So I apologise for the mistake on that. It is a slightly different situation.
And also, Fatou Bensouda is very keen to uphold the integrity of the ICC, obviously, but there does seem to be a major contradiction around this Kenya case with regard to that. I mean, is there a feeling that she's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place now that the AU is taking such a hard-line stance?
Well, this is not the first time the AU has taken a hard stance. The AU took the same stance when the arrest warrant was issued against the Sudanese president. So this is not the first time. I don't think that we are really that surprised by the stance of the AU now. It's quite unfortunate because African states did play a role in the adoption of the ICC statute, and many African states, 34, have ratified the statute. But you do make an important point that why do we have only African individuals before the court? Why are all the situations currently before the ICC African situations? Well, some do argue that perhaps because the other states can deal with their own suspects, they can bring their suspects to justice, that they do have the necessary judicial structures in place for that. It's also very costly. International crimes are very, very costly. The other issue is that you do need state cooperation. You asked if there was a case brought against a leader from one of the powerful and influential countries, you need state cooperation. The ICC is dependent on state cooperation. And it is perhaps an important or a reality in criminal justice to go after those that you can go after. It doesn't mean that crimes are not being committed in other places.
I could just bring you this on this issue of state cooperation in Kenya. The two individuals who are under threat of indictment are willing to cooperate themselves, but they are also democratically elected by their very own people. So what next? Where do you go from there?
When I speak of state cooperation, yes, you need cooperation of the state's consent, but also cooperation of other states, of other, you know, of
a consensus among a group of states, you mean?
Well, I mean, if you want to arrest somebody who's wanted by the ICC, you don't only have to rely on the state that person comes from, but really on the international community. So if you have a powerful and influential leader who might be a member of the P5 of the United Nations, I mean, who's going to cooperate in such an arrest?
Okay, our interesting point there, Julius.
Yeah, it isn't interesting, but it doesn't work in the Kenyan case because, number one, you need to use those extra measures if people are not cooperating. But Kenyan president, deputy president are willing to cooperate.
They are, yes.
They go to the ICC in The Hague. They've been going, they've been consistent. They promised even after election they'll be cooperating. So they haven't ended. It's a different case from Omar Bashir from Sudan. Because in his case, ICC issued a warrant of arrest. Mm-hmm. But then it was the other member states of African countries that didn't arrest Omar Bashir. But again, you have to understand, for any president or any criminal to be arrested, the state they go into must be a signatory to the Rome Statute. So it's not just any country.
Right, right. Well, that kind of does beg the question, bringing us back round again to, well, the potential solution seems to be for Africa as a continent to start dealing with its own criminal issues. And do you think this whole situation could, like, be laying the seedbed for Africa to move much quicker with regard to that?
Well, it could. I think having an African court is one of the solutions. I do also think that the national jurisdiction, there has to be an emphasis on the national jurisdiction. States have the right to determine matters within their own jurisdiction. And as Evelyn has said, that it's a court of last, the international process is a court of last resort, and it's a very expensive and very time-consuming process.
I believe they've spent over $1 billion in the 11 years they've been around.
They have.
And not how many prosecutions have happened?
Well, a handful. International tribunals generally, if you look at the tribunals of temporal jurisdiction like the Yugoslav and the Rwandan tribunals, they perform a certain role, but they're very, very costly and they're very time-consuming. Yugoslavia is a particular example because there were national tribunals within that jurisdiction as well that complemented the ICTY and certainly the ICTY.
Right.
Bosnia is a particular example, and I say that because that's where much of my experience comes from,
mm-hmm.
where there was a national court with international assistance.
Yeah.
That's actually looked upon as being a model for the future. It's certainly a process that we are advising on and working on for the conflict in Syria, to have a court of national jurisdiction with international assistance at some future stage. So that's
mm-hmm.
also something
mm-hmm.
That African countries can look to. And then of course, we now have the situation in Senegal, which I think is a very, very positive step, having a court of national jurisdiction, provided it has integrity. And then the ICC remains as that court of last resort.
Right, right. Well, we'll look forward to actually seeing what does happen with the case of the ex-dictator Hissène Habré and his upcoming trial. But before we move on to a more in-depth look at potential solutions which are based on an African consensus, let's have a look at what you've been saying in our Facebook fan page. As usual, three comments. The first one coming from Ibrahim Mohammed. And Ibrahim says, I certainly buy into the idea of establishing an African criminal court instead of needing to resort to the ICC to gain justice for African victims of war crimes. We need to find solutions to our own problems in our own countries. And the second comment is from Tony Lucien C. Ejingonye. And he asked the question that we've been chewing on, and he says, why is it that leaders from other parts of the world are not so easily charged with war crimes by the ICC? I'm certainly not making a case for corrupt African leaders, but there is an obvious bias here. And finally, Esther Kwamu says, there is no doubt that the ICC is flawed. However, I don't think an African criminal court is the answer. The move by the African Union illustrates this perfectly, as it is simply an obvious attempt by some members to avoid justice. We must remember 34 nations, African nations, have ratified the ICC's founding statute. Also, 4 out of the 8 situations currently under investigation in Africa were referred to the court by the countries themselves. Indeed, the variety full of the spectrum that we've been discussing already in this show. Let us know what you think about this issue and any other issues that you feel perhaps we haven't been covering here on Africa Today. And there are a number of ways you can do that. Have a look at this.
Keep your thoughts coming in. Email africa@presstv.co.uk or text us on +44 78 00 00 8086. Or you can go to our Facebook fan page, Africa Today, Press TV, London. Or you can now follow us on Twitter. We are at Africa Today TV.
Indeed, African solutions for African problems really does make common sense. I think very few people would disagree with that. And I'd like to bring you in, Julius. Let's further the discussion on the potential for the success of an African criminal court. How would you see it going? Do you think the case of Hissène Habré is a hopeful one with regard to that?
I think it's a hopeful one. One of the reasons to why I think that is just because, number one, it is happening within Africa. And if you look at this character, he staged a coup in 1982 in Chad, neighboring country. He went to in hiding in Senegal, and now he was arrested. Of course, there has been 4 times his extradition request by Belgium,
mm-hmm.
and he was never handed over. Until now the UN comes in, until the MPs in Senegal fought to establish International Criminal Court within their country, mm-hmm. until now UN tells Senegal, you either extradite him or prosecute him within your country. And therefore they've gone for the option of prosecuting him. I think it's going to be, it's a hopeful situation. He has been the first president to be tried within Africa.
It's a historical moment, crisis. Isn't it?
So yeah. It's like setting the pace. And right. there's a lot of a different approach, because now one of the greatest problem they have now, African leaders have, is with the ICC. Now, if they see trials, prosecutions can be happening within the continent, perhaps they may be more supportive of that. And mm-hmm. therefore, the way forward for African criminal justice court within Africa may be very useful, mm-hmm. a useful tool. I'm not saying not to just to work on in, like pariah, you know, on the periphery of everything, but I'm talking about a court that would be working in conjunction with the ICC.
Right.
Because
right.
at the end of the day, I believe in international rule, basically, so no nations can exist on their own.
So you think the ICC should actually exist and will be, in the future, be able to fulfill its potential? Because thus far, it's certainly not being seen as that.
It's got to be reformed.
Yeah, yeah.
There are shortcomings.
Okay. Do you see these shortcomings Julius is talking about? I mean,
yeah.
And how would they be reformed? And where's the push going to come from?
Well, I mean, international justice is imperfect. The ICC has suffered a great deal of criticism. Some of the criticisms are valid. Clearly, it does need to be reformed. I'm not one to propose what those reforms are, because I think the institution itself has to take a long, hard look at itself and determine where it can improve.
Do you think taking a backtrack on the issue of the Kenya warrants would be a way forward for the ICC, or would it lose even more integrity?
Well, I'm in a slightly difficult position, because I used to be on the Kenyatta defense team. So so in that sense, it's difficult for me to that comment. But I think the Kenya case is a very important case for the ICC, because how it goes from here will determine how it is perceived internationally. But one of the areas where I think there does need to be much greater emphasis, and that's this unfamiliar principle of complementarity, where we are, as we're saying, dealing with everything in the national jurisdiction first and only then go to the ICC. My personal view is that complementarity mm-hmm. does impose an obligation on the ICC and the international community generally yeah. to ensure the national jurisdiction has the capacity to deal with things internally.
Right.
That be that in ICC training judges, prosecutors and lawyers how to deal with these matters, providing technical assistance. I think that is something that the ICC needs to look at. As yes. an international lawyer, who believes that impunity in all its forms must be brought to an end, I do, of course, believe in the ICC. I fully support the ICC from a theoretical standpoint, right. but it needs to be reformed.
And if I could bring the final word in the last minute to you, Evelyn, the two ladies, respective leaders of the AU and the ICC, really do have this huge conundrum. Do you think that they can actually stall the crisis a little bit? What do you feel they may do next?
Well, I think they have different roles.
Sorry?
I think the two ladies have different roles.
Yes.
The prosecutor of the ICC, Fatou Bensouda, has to be an independent prosecutor.
Right.
She does not have to account to a political body.
Right, but the AU, it cannot work without the cooperation of the AU, can it?
Well, I mean, the chairperson of the African Union has to work with the political leaders. I mean, I don't think she has an independent role. So she is accountable to the African leaders. The prosecutor of the ICC is totally independent. The ICC...
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, I do have to cut you off. And again, we've come right back to the conundrum that we started with, and we wait with bated breath to see what happened. Thank you so much to all of you who've been sending email comments to us. That email address is africa@presstv.co.uk, or you can text +447800008086. And don't forget that Twitter address at Africa Today TV. Thanks to today's guests, Toby Cadman, Julius Mbaluto, and Evelyn Ankuma. Join us next week for another edition of Africa Today. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Vuyiswa Ngubongwana, on behalf of the whole team.